Welcome to the Tossing Clubs podcast. Next on the tee, your hosts, Frank Jang, Zach Moses, and Aaron Tan.
Yo, what is up, everyone? This is another week of Tossing Clubs. I'm with Zach and Aaron. My name is Frank, and guys, this is a, I don't know, sort of a grab bag week of topics, isn't it? But before we start, Zach, I think you, before we start recording, you posed a great question about construction, and I want everyone to, hear what our resident construction expert has to say about it.
Yeah, I mean, I, as you guys know, and as our listeners know, just moved into a new place in San Francisco, and there's a construction project happening across the street, and there's a bunch of like pretty mean, nosy neighbors that are just on these construction people all the time, yelling about being in the street, yelling about making too much noise, yelling about trucks being in the middle of the road and messing with the vibe of the neighborhood. And I'm just like, is this the neighborhood I live in, or is this a common thing? So Aaron, our, resident construction guy, what's the deal?
It is absolutely a common thing. It's pretty crazy, but there's on probably like 50% of jobs, there's at least one just like crazy neighbor that is just like yelling and just like calling the city and calling the cops. Like, I mean, there are, we have a lot of loud equipment that we use, especially because I do concrete, so we've got like a lot of trucks and a lot of like backup alarms and so there's just like beeping all day, and then when we're like pumping concrete, the things are super loud, and so there's like hours that cities like make us work within those hours. But aside from that, we can kind of just like do our work during the day, but some people just still get pissed off. They're like, oh, I wanted to sleep until 11 every day, or I work from home and I can't focus, and it's like, sorry, we're just doing our jobs, we're just getting paid to do this.
I do have to say, they arrive pretty early, like 7 o'clock, 7:30, which is, I mean, most people are up by that time, but I'm still in bed usually. But
yeah, that's definitely the main like daily struggle, is that construction like starts early, so everyone, like a lot of people drive in from like Stockton or like far, so they want to beat the traffic. They get in at like 6 and they're like ready to start working, and because they want to leave early and beat the traffic. And it seems like the general public is, they don't start work at 6, they start work at more like 8 or 9 or 10. So I understand that part, and it'll be like right when, like a lot of times it's like right when 7 a.m hits, like in San Francisco 7 a.m is like the noise restriction start where you can start working, and it'll be like right at 7 a.m just boom, everything will start. Or we'll start 5 minutes early or whatever, 15 minutes early, and be like, ah, by the time people get here, it's already 7. So yeah, I get it.
I mean, if you have like all your permits and someone calls the cops, like, do they just not show up, or do they show up and they'll just like check? And what happens when these people actually complain?
I think if you call the cops, I don't think the cops will do anything. But if you call the city and all the permits are in, then they'll just like log, they'll be like, okay, like we'll look into it. And then they'll like log a complaint against our permit. And so we have like usually a list of like complaints, at least like, time and day or whatever. But nothing ever happens with those.
Interesting. Well, we do love construction workers, a huge crossover, as we've talked about, on golfers and construction. Yeah, good times.
Yeah, great times.
Zach, I gotta ask then, are you fully moved in?
No. I mean, I think it's gonna take a while. I mean, there's just like so many little things, so many boxes. Like we're moved in enough to survive and to live, and it's okay. But yeah, we got plenty of work to do. So I feel like most of my free time, most of my weekends, still moving in.
You know, when you moved in, it's raining, but you know what else happened? This is a little bit random, but the first in out, not the first in out, but this is the first closure of an in out location, and it happened in Oakland. Do you guys hear about this?
No.
Yeah, so do you guys know the in and out that's right by the Oakland airport?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one, I go there basically after every time I go to Monarch or Metropolitan. It's like super close to that location. But that one is actually closing, which is sort of not a surprise. That location is notorious for car break-ins. There's a Raising Cane's there, which doesn't allow dine-in as well. They only allow drive-through because of safety reasons.
Wow.
But dude, I just wanted to highlight that because it's so sad.
Dude, I know. Oakland is like, man, it's not as bad as the media makes it sound, but it's definitely like gotten so much worse recently.
Yeah, I don't know. I was talking to my movers, and they move people like all over the country. And they said the scariest place they've ever been was Oakland for like a move. And they were like, yeah, like Compton, no issue. Oakland, very bad. I'm just like, what? I like Oakland. Oakland's nice.
It really is insane. Like when you're at the, I don't want to say bad areas, but the like hot spot areas, like near the airport, East Oakland. And like, I can say this because I live here. It's like the wild, wild west. Like, just it's different than I moved from the Tenderloin to here, and I feel like it's more wild here. Like, just kind of general lawlessness, like drivers not following the roads, like just everything, and the break-ins. There's glass everywhere. Like, I have to specifically walk my dog, like, certain routes depending on where the broken glass is that day.
So, if you see a car getting broken into, would you call the police?
I wouldn't, because I don't think they would do anything. Surprisingly, I've never seen one, like, in person. I did see one in San Francisco, but not in Oakland. And I don't think the cops won't do anything. They just, like, there's... Yeah. I don't know if it's there's nothing they can do or if they just have too much other stuff to worry about.
I mean, yeah, people are just leaving their windows open, right? So it doesn't happen. So you don't have to pay for a fixed window.
Yeah, it's like, okay, steal my stuff. I just don't want to deal with the glass in my car.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we've
gone 10
gone
minutes.
Gone through 10 minutes without talking anything about golf. So
great golf courses in the East Bay, though. There we go. Bringing it back to the theme.
Speaking of great golf courses, one of our listeners actually asked, there's a bunch of great golf courses in the Monterey area. And just like we have a resident Oakland expert, we also have a resident Monterey expert. So our viewer question guy asked Zach, all right, if I am going to Monterey and money was no issue, which course should he play? I mean, there's definitely a lot of them. And for someone who shoots around 100, which course should he play?
I mean, I think that's like a pretty, there's a lot in there, right? It's like you shoot 100, but money's not an issue. First time to Monterey. Obviously, there's so many courses. Like, how much time do you have down there? Are you going with a group? Like, are you playing by yourself? Like, a lot of different variables. So maybe we can all talk them out a little bit. Like, obviously, there's all the really nice courses down in Pebble Beach itself, but then, you know, Spyglass and Poppy Hills. And those are all incredible courses. And then if you want to save a little money, you got places like Bayonet and Black Horse. Del Monte is pretty nice. Pacific Grove has always been known as one of the cheaper, like, hidden gems around the U.S. because the back nine's along the water there. So, I mean, if money is actually not an issue, like, I mean, I think you're playing Pebble Beach because it's Pebble Beach. I think if money is a thing, then... I mean, like, what's your budget? What's your budget, Frank? Or did this listener not mention that? Or they said any type of money, right?
Yeah, well, I think exactly. Just if money was no issue, and you played one, I would agree with you, Zach. It'd be Pebble. But I actually have some friends who just started playing golf like this past year, and they're a couple. And then the first course they played down Monterey was Pacific Grove. I think that's probably the most famous, popular course to like. That's not like the top tier level in that area, right? And so we played there before too. It's like, I think it's well worth it.
Yeah, it's like $65. And the first nine is kind of whatever. It's, you know, in the neighborhood, a fun little front nine. But then the back nine's where you get your money's worth, all along the ocean, lots of sand dunes. It's like really beautiful and like a lot of the similar views that you'd get of other courses located within Pebble Beach. So I feel like, yeah, that's a spot that everyone tries to go to.
What are we talking? No, Aaron, for like a weekend round, is it like $100, like $50?
I think it's like somewhere in between, like maybe $70-$80, depending on when you go out. I feel like Bayonet and Black Horse are two like really solid courses down there that maybe don't get as much attention as everywhere else, but you can play those for a similar price, like $80-$90, and get some really good golf with some views of the ocean, but from like up on an elevated hill in the distance.
I was gonna say, if this guy is shooting 100 and wants to, you know, have a good time, and to me, having a good time is not losing a bunch of golf balls, I think Laguna Seca is an option, right? Isn't that the one that I played, Zach, where it was like,
yeah, that one, yeah. Yeah, it's fun. It's like a little beater course. It's, I think I've mentioned it before, it's where my high school played. It's like definitely, yeah, yeah, it's fun. Like that's a good one. Also Monterey Pines, I call it the Pines. It's like the first golf course I ever played. It's, you know, $30-$40, actually really fun, like super fun, like a par 67, a lot of shorter holes, a lot of like, you know, a couple drivable par fours and very gettable par fives. That's a really nice one.
I'm just surprised that you remember your first golf course. Like, Aaron, do you remember the first course that you played?
No, but I remember the first time in my adult life, the first course I played where I like fell in love with golf.
What golf course was it?
It was Karika, but it was before they renovated it. So like, it didn't look like how it looks now. It was like a non-existent course.
Yeah.
But I think it's better now.
Also Del Monte, I was going to try to not mention it, but such a nice course. I mean, it's like part of the Pebble Beach family. I mean, the conditions aren't going to be as great as the other Pebble Beach courses, but you're playing for, you know, a little bit over $100. So that's a decent one when the conditions are right. I feel like the two times we've played it, it's been wet and rainy, and we haven't really had the full effect there, but that's another good one. So I feel like we gave a ton of answers for this guy, but it kind of depends on like what type of golfer you are. Like, are you just down there to, you know, have some drinks, have a good time? Or are you there to like see golf that like represents what Monterey is known for? Like, do you want to see cypress trees? Do you want to be along the ocean? Like, if so, then maybe pay a little extra money and play like a Poppy Hills or something. But if not, then if you're just, you know, down there for a weekend and don't really care where you play, then yeah, some of the courses like Laguna Seca or Monterey Pines are a lot more forgiving and, you know, could be a bit more fun to play.
Zach, have you played Spyglass?
Yes. It's been a while, but yes.
Do you, because one, not popular opinion, but I've heard it multiple times, is that Spyglass is better than Pebble Beach.
It doesn't have like the history, right? It doesn't have, you can't go on to hole number 7 at Spyglass and try to recreate, you know, Tiger's 7-iron where he hit it onto the par. Like, yeah, if you're just comparing the course against the course, like without the views, you're just looking at like interesting holes and like, is this difficult or not? Or like, how is this designed? Then yeah, maybe Spyglass has a slight edge, but it's hard not to consider everything else that's happened at Pebble Beach. And I mean, that's obviously why it's more expensive. I think I heard they're raising the rate at Pebble to like $1,000 soon. So actually, it might be a great time to go play Pebble Beach now while it's only like $650.
$1,000, not including, you have to stay there, right?
I think so. I've heard there's like maybe some ways to get around that. But yeah, I think they definitely push you towards staying at the hotel. But it would put it more in line with TPC Sawgrass. That's like $950, or that one out in Vegas. What is it, like
Shadow
Wolf Creek or Shadow Creek?
Yeah,
that one's like over $1,000. So they're like really pricing some people out with these insane prices. But I mean, there's just so much demand. They can keep raising the price.
God, that's crazy.
Maybe we should go play real quick, just because. I mean, you basically play it twice for the price of, you know, what it's gonna be.
Yeah.
It seems like everything's getting way and way more expensive. Oh. Like to the point of ridiculousness.
Also, if you go play, you can play Peter Hay, fun little 9-hole par 3 course. It's like $60 or something, but designed by Tiger Woods, all in the area. If you go to Monterey, you should at least go check out the area and like walk around Pebble Beach, go to the pro shop, do some of that stuff, because it's like a fun spot.
Hey, should we pivot our golf trip to Pebble?
Yeah. I mean, how do you guys feel about playing Pebble? Like, do you ever think you'll be ready? Because for a lot of people, Pebble Beach is the epitome of the dream golf course that they want to play. It's a once in a lifetime trip. Like, we're kind of spoiled because we're so close to it and it's so accessible. But for someone all the way across the world that doesn't live in the US, like, that's a trip of a lifetime. That's kind of like us going over to St. Andrews, right? And so, like, at what stage do you think is, like, where do you feel comfortable going to it? Like, do you want to get to a certain skill level? Or do you want to get to a, like, wait till a certain age? Or like, would you guys want to go tomorrow if someone offered it to you? Like, you'd have to pay, or would you want to, like, you know, wait a couple years or something?
I'd do it right now. I feel like my skill level has kind of plateaued, and it's at a point where I can semi-control where my ball's going off the tee, and I have a decent enough short game to scramble and make my way around, and I feel like it is what it is. It's probably not getting much better than this.
Yeah, I think, like you said, Zach, it's only gonna get more expensive. So, you know, I'm probably not gonna shoot my lowest round ever, whenever, you know, whether that's now or in 10 years. I mean, just being at Pebble, it's probably something where the experience of it, not like just the golf, like the holistic experience of being there, is probably something else, right? So if someone offered me, yeah, I would probably do it. I think part of it is knowing that I'm probably going to save some bucks, because if I play in 10 years, it's going to be $3,000, which is totally possible.
I feel like you have to also know that you'll be in the right mindset. Like, you have to have type one fun with this experience, because it's a once in, well, I guess it may not be once in a lifetime, but it's freaking expensive. It's the number one public course. And, you know, a big part of it is, like you said, the history, but then like the views. And it's stuff that's, you know, if you have a good round or a bad round, you can still take that all in. So I think if you think that you're going to get frustrated with your golf game, then at least for people like us that have a budget, like, maybe you hold off until, you know, you're at a point where you can kind of just enjoy yourself.
Yeah, I just want to keep the ball like in the ballpark, you know. Like, I'd be so mad if I just went to Pebble and then like every hole I was hitting a second tee shot because like lost the drive. Like, I mean, that's like the worst. And I feel like it's kind of happened at bigger courses before. And like, that course is relatively tight in some areas, so it could be, it could go like from type one to type two pretty quickly. and like, no one wants to hit, you know, slinger three woods off the tee, which is what I do when I can't control the ball. So, But yeah, if you guys are going, I'm down.
Yeah, I had that experience when I played Spyglass. I talked about it last year. But I, for whatever reason, my game was terrible that day. I think, because we had played
after we played
before. Yeah, that's right. And I guess my body got tired. I don't know, but it was really bad. And I shot like 100 or 103 or something, which is like the only time I've shot in the hundreds probably that year. And it was like, I just had to keep like telling myself, like, just enjoy this. But it was hard. It was back and forth.
Yeah, you see people who play Pebble, even when it's crosswinds, raining, and they're literally in the middle of a storm. Would you guys also, like, you guys already booked for it, you might as well go, right?
Yeah, if that you can't almost get a seems, refund.
I mean, you could try to get a refund, but I feel like in that scenario, you're excused for playing poorly. And so, like, I'd probably actually have a ton of fun because I'd just be trying to hit these crazy shots through the wind or through the rain and be like, whatever. Like, I don't know. It takes away the pressure. Like, those videos of, like, abandoned dunes where it's, like, you know,
yeah,
people can barely stand up. Like, I guess that wouldn't be fun, but
when the flag stick is, like, bent at almost 90 degrees.
Yeah, at first, I don't think you could get a refund. I mean, they're Pebble Beach, so they're just like, because I think if they could get, those people could get a refund, they would. But I just think that shifting their tee times for people that book their trips way out in advance would be really difficult. So, but hey, I mean, if you like get struck by lightning, you know, they're liable for probably something and you could, you know, use that as blackmail or something. I don't know.
Well, good question from our listener. What do we got? What else we got, Frank?
Someone asked, so Nick Dunlap, he is the 20-year-old amateur who won the Amex championship. And he asked, what's the point of staying in the amateur status? It just seems like you just have that status and you're not going to earn any money even if you do win, which was in the case of Nick. And I think that's a good question because on the surface level, it seems like this guy just foregone like $1.5 million. It seems sort of like a huge loss for him. But yeah, why? Why is that the case?
Why stay an amateur? I mean, maybe the kid just wants to go back to Alabama and party it up. Like, maybe he wants to chill a little bit longer and not go on this, like, you know, super stressful PGA tour, even though he could be making a bunch of money. But I don't know. I think what the interesting part about this decision for Nick is he won the U.S. Amateur last year, and so he qualified into the Masters, the U.S. Open, and the Open Championship. And I think if he goes pro, he loses that opportunity to play in the U.S. Open and the Open Championship. However, the professional win that he had lets him into, I think he still gets to go to the Masters and gets to go to the PGA Championship, but then you're basically choosing between majors. And so I don't know which ones you like more. I feel like playing in the Open Championship, like the original major, the one over in Europe, is kind of a huge deal. So if you're like, just want the opportunity to do that, I could see a reason for staying amateur, but I don't know. You're playing Augusta either way, so I think that's pretty sweet.
Man, it'd be hard to turn down the opportunity to make like professional athlete money, though, especially, you know, like how expensive, I hear all the time, like how expensive it is to be like a pro golfer that's not at the top. And if he's just proven to everyone and to himself that he can win on the PGA Tour, like, you never know, like, an injury or like what's gonna happen. Like, maybe the time is now. I don't know. I feel like maybe I'd go that route and just take advantage and, you know, hope that my game's good enough that I'll be able to play in the Open someday anyways, you know, qualify a different way.
Yeah, and I think in terms of money, he's someone who obviously has been making a lot of noise. Isn't he the number one ranked amateur now? And with NIL, he's probably going to get paid, very handsomely. So, and NIL is something that's sort of guaranteed too. Whereas if you're on the professional tour, I think you have to obviously pay your own expenses. Whereas if you're at Alabama, you could, like you said, party it up and go to tournaments on the school. Like the school, I would think at least subsidize part of it, if not all of it. So, you know, I could see why you would want to become pro, and it doesn't make sense to become an amateur. But, you know, if he's 20 years old and he's got this bright future ahead of him, I mean, you know, some people say his college years, like, those are probably the years that are the most formative, where he makes all of his friends and makes all of his connections. So especially with NIL, I feel like he doesn't need to hurry this process at all.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see what type of NIL deals he's being approached with. Like, I'd imagine, yes, he's the number one amateur, but also it's golf. And so I'm sure he can make some money, but he's probably not making, you know, basketball or football money when you think of those top recruits. But then again, like, also, yeah, like, what is his background? What's his upbringing? Does he have money already? Like, does he need it now? I feel like there's, so many variables, so many considerations. Pretty tough decision, but I'm sure he's just, like, chilling right now. Super excited. He dropped out of the Farmers, right? He's like, I don't need to go play that tournament. I just won.
Yeah, exactly. And just imagine being his caddy. Your guy won. You're supposed to get 10%, and then you literally get none.
Oof. You got to think of that as like a long-term investment.
Yeah.
This guy has the ability to be, it was like the first amateur to win a professional tournament since 1991 when Phil Mickelson won it. If he's the next Phil Mickelson, that caddy's going to make a shit ton of money.
There should be something where you could, you know how you invest in stocks, you can invest in amateur players. So you like buy a share of his future earnings. I'm pretty sure that type of business exists, actually. I just haven't really looked into it, but it seems like it makes sense for both parties, right? If you come from a place where you don't have much means and you need money to travel around, buy equipment, get lessons, and you know someone invests in you, and then down the road you pay them back with your future earnings, I feel like that has to be something that can be drawn up.
Sounds interesting.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. It sounds so difficult. Like, I don't think I'd be a good scout, like, for any sport. Like, nailing people super early to determine if they're going to be good or not. Like, you can guess and, like, kind of get it. I don't know. There's so many good golfers, too.
I mean, if that's the model, if it's, like, a stock. But what if it's just, like, what if it's more like a bond where you just, you can buy, you know, give him $10 and then he'll just pay you out proportionally in 5 years or something.
Dude, if this is not a business idea, this should be a business idea.
Frank's out of money though. Always Prize Picks losing.
Prize Picks is not the way. Parlays is not the
Frank's
way.
Frank's trying to make back that money some other way.
Aaron, we had a buddy. He sent a text to, Evan sent us a text the other day of a 6-person parlay bet, but the sport was League of Legends, and the it was like how many kills each player in the game would get.
Like,
you can make that bet, like an esports bet on League of Legends on Prize Picks. That's insane.
Like, maybe he made that bet and he was trying to get you guys on with him.
Yeah, he's like, I guarantee, I don't know the player's name, some esports guy, guarantee this guy's going to get 8 kills. He didn't get 8 kills, but.
Dang, Evan's in it. There was, like, I go through phases, and at some point I was betting on esports. I was betting on CSGO, and, like, the tournaments are in Europe, and so I'd wake up, like, early, like the tournaments would start at like midnight, and I'd like set my alarm for like 4 or 5 in the morning so I could like watch a little bit before I go to work.
Wait, do you guys know what's happening in these esports leagues? Like, do you know who the players are? You're just randomly throwing money at these.
No, I like
you're in it, Frank. Like,
The first bet I ever made on Prize Picks was for the League of Legends World Championship, bro.
But
and yes, I do know those players.
Okay, like, who are the top three League of Legend players out there?
Okay, ask anyone. The number one player is Faker.
Oh, I've actually heard of that guy. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I've heard the name, but not like I don't know. Yeah, I've heard the name. I didn't know he was still legit. Okay, who else we got?
Well, on his team, there's a guy named Gumayushi. Oh, dude, I'm mispronouncing his name. But everyone calls him Guma. He's the ADC. Dude, I know League, all right? But I don't know CSGO. And I definitely did not know the players that Evan bet on, which was like a huge reach. Like, Faker is the top player for the top team. Mm. So, obviously.
He's like LeBron James.
Exactly. So, everyone knows who that is. But he's betting on people like, I don't know, like Buddy Hield and, I don't know, like Duncan Robinson, stuff like that.
Where do you even watch this? Like, Aaron, where were you waking up to watch esports?
It was, they would stream it on like a certain site. I can't even remember now, but it was like a CSGO streaming site. And they just had a free stream.
Okay.
If it's a big tournament, it's on Twitch.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was definitely on Twitch now that I think about it.
Damn. All right.
Yeah. Look, I think actually these type of tournaments, you could probably get the best edge on these type of bets than like betting on LeBron James points.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say that's what it was, is that I just stumbled on someone who has started posting like his results and he was betting on CSGO, and I had literally never watched it before in my life, but he was like, you know, hitting like a lot. He was having a lot of success, and so I just started tailing him. And then I got into it and I started winning. So then I started following and like learning how the game worked and everything. And it was just so much fun because like these guys are just making me money. It was legit.
Dude, this is crazy. This is why sports gambling is such a big deal. Like, it literally draws in so many eyeballs from like people who were never, ever going to watch a minute of that, like a game or a round or whatever it might be.
Yeah, absolutely. You can bet on anything nowadays. It's insane.
Yeah. Oh, man. Zach, you got to get on Prize Picks, man. Sure. It might not be for me, but it might be for you. Just remember that.
I have, like, an addictive personality. I'm not trying to get caught up in this gambling. Just too much time, too much money lost. I can already see the results of this endeavor.
Let me tell you. They have promotions. For example, Flex Fridays. You get a bet up to $20 on them. So you could just put in some money and just bet once a week on Fridays. It's a free bet.
That's how you start. And then you start betting on League of Legends, and then you start waking up at 4 a.m. for CSGO. That's where it goes. I mean, who knows where we'll be in a year once all this shit's like legal everywhere. Mm. You just bet on, you'll be able to bet on like anything you see. Just like walk down the street and be like, that guy's probably going to cross the street in 10 seconds. Like, handshake bet, I mean, or whatever.
The fact that you could like bet on balls and strikes, runs and passes, is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it does make sports incredibly entertaining. Yeah. But just I guess gamble safely, responsibly.
Yeah. All right, last question. So, relate to the episode that we did last week, but I talked about my like first tee swing thoughts. You know, my mindset, and a listener asks, all right, so what do you guys actually think about on the first tee? What's your swing thought? Frank, we already know what you think about, but what about Zach and Aaron?
Swing thought on the first tee. I mean, I do get nervous. If there's a lot of people watching, I get nervous. And I mean, I try to have like my swing thought, like my technical swing thought, and just block everything else out. But sometimes, you know, depending on how many people are watching, I'm thinking about, but I don't have like a separate, unrelated, like find your happy place thought that I go to.
Yeah, I think in the past it's been, let's get this over with, which is not the swing thought you need on the first tee. I've tried to move to a more technical one, which is like swing up on the ball. And I'm just like focusing on like hitting the ball up, and so I'm trying to ignore all the other stuff. But I mean, Frank, I feel like this question is coming with some additional context that you may need to provide.
Dude, I don't want to provide it. What context are you talking about?
Like, we've heard some listeners on the podcast have, you know, recommended some happy thoughts and places to go.
Yeah. No, actually, this listener actually provided a suggestion as well. So everyone who wants to help me out on my golf game, appreciate you. And he said, well, you got to go to your happy place, like Aaron alluded to. Just think of boobs. And I thought, damn, wow. There's actually some potential, because when I saw that, I was like, oh, yeah, like no nerves. It's actually sort of funny.
Well, it's kind of like public speaking, right? How they say, think of everybody naked. And it's supposed to like take your mind off. Like, I don't know if you...
Is that the reason why they say that? Like, I've seen that as a trope in various shows, but does that actually even work?
Can't say I've ever tried it.
Yeah, I don't know. But it's supposed to get you like so distracted and so like relaxed. Like, instead of you being embarrassed, it's like, wow, everyone else should be embarrassed because they're naked. And then you just relax.
I think we should try it next time we golf.
Dude, I don't want to imagine you guys naked, though.
No, not that one.
Dude. I think there's like actually some validity to that suggestion. And I'm really interested in trying it out.
Frank's just going to start like laughing or smiling on the first tee now. That's working.
So, you guys literally just like think about your swing thought and that's it?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about, as boring as that is.
Yeah, I mean, or try to, yeah.
Boobs, bro, like.
I might need to change it.
Well, thank you for submitting your questions, your suggestions as well. Keep them coming. I take no offense in any of this. So we hope you enjoyed the episode this week, and we'll be back next week. And see you until then.